kids get smart radio.
Yo, 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 yo.
Get smart radio.
Yo, 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 yo. Yo, 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 yo.
Get smart radio.
Yo, 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 yo.
Get smart radio.
Yo, 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 yo.
Get
smart radio.
Yo, smart, yo, yo, yo.
Knowledge is the basis for all humanity. Knowledge is the basis.
Get smart.
Get really, really
smart.
To the brain smart.
Yo, 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 yo.
Get smart, smart, smart.
Smart.
Radio.
Yo, 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 yo.
Smart, 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 smart.
Smart.
Get smart. Get smart. Comes right out of your heart.
That's the way I like it.
So go get smart.
Yo, 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 yo.
Get smart. Radio.
Welcome to Kids Get Smart Radio. We are your hosts. I'm Griffin Middleman.
I'm Milo Mannheim.
I'm Sabine Paris.
I'm Jules Mallard.
I'm Natalie Bruce.
Welcome to those of you who are here in the audience. Welcome to those of you listening to our live stream at GetSmartRadio.net. And welcome to those of you who are listening to this as a podcast in the future.
Tonight's topic is stopping violence in young people's lives. We chose this topic because it is important to us, and we don't want any violence in any of our lives. But we know that it exists.
Tonight we're going to talk about why violence exists in kids' lives and what is being done to stop it. To help us out with this discussion, we've invited two wonderful guests. They both work at the Children's Institute in Los Angeles, and they really understand violence in kids' lives and spend every day trying to stop it.
Please welcome Adriana Molina and Anna Moscoso. Thank you both for being here.
Thank you.
For those of you here in the live audience, while you listen to us interview Adriana and Anna, please write down any questions you may have on the postcards you found on your seat and hand them to Natalie, one of the hosts. Please write your name and your question, and please write neatly. Thanks.
Like all Get Smart Radio shows, at the end of this broadcast, we'll ask the audience a couple of quiz questions about what you learned during this show. And those of you with the correct answers will get a prize, so pay attention.
Adriana and Anna, can you both tell us a little about you and the work that you do?
Sure. Thank you, first of all, for inviting us to represent people who are doing something just like yourselves to stop violence in the community and in young people's lives. I really want to acknowledge you guys for choosing this as a topic. You guys, I think we should give them a hand for choosing this as a topic. The work that I do right now is at Children's Institute, which is an agency that has been around for over 100 years. And in that 100 years, we've done a whole bunch of different work to help kids that have been abused, neglected, or experienced some kind of trauma. What I do right now is I work in a project with the Los Angeles Police Department where families have had a situation of domestic violence. We go out with the officers so that we can provide services to the families while the police takes care of the police business. They take care of the investigations and figuring out if it's a crime or not and all of those details. And we take care of, well, what did the kids experience? What did the parents experience? How do we keep them from having these kinds of experiences in the future?
My name's Anna, and what I do is I work with the youth population. So I develop teen programs to keep kids out of gangs. And I get to work with 10 to 15-year-olds every day. And I'm school-based, so that means I'm on the school campus. I get to be there when they have to go to the dean's office or if a kid's involved in a fight, and kind of process that with them as well, so that we can be the front line there at the school with them.
And also, I do, I am part of the steering committee at the Violence Prevention Coalition of Greater Los Angeles, which is a whole network of people throughout LA who works together to stop violence in the community. And one of the programs that they have focuses specifically on youth. So there's all sorts of things happening. We're just a little representation of what's happening in the community.
Thank you. Why do you think some kids become violent and some kids don't?
Well, I think that it has to do a lot with the factors in a kid's life. Sometimes it could be the violence is in home, you know, and violence doesn't always have to be physical. You know, it could be parents yelling. It could be the way the brother and a sister interact. So there's different ways that a kid can learn violence. Sometimes it's out in the community. If you're walking by and you see something happen to someone else, it could be something as dramatic as a gun shooting, or it could just be another kid picking on another kid. So there's a lot of different factors in a kid's life that can lead to them to learn violence.
I think there's a lot of answers that we can look at, but I think the answer to anything is, how does somebody become an actor? Well, they're exposed to what needs to happen to become an actor. How does somebody become a doctor? Well, they're exposed to the things that need to happen to become a doctor. So what I'm trying to say is that violence is a learned behavior. That's my perception. And it's also one of the things that gives me a lot of optimism about what's possible, because if violence is a learned behavior, then we can learn alternatives to violence. And that's one of the tenets of the Violence Prevention Coalition, is that if we get our community together and we include everybody, from people in schools, from therapists, from the police, our legislators and our politicians, all making an effort to reduce violence, it's totally possible. Can I tell you a little story? Okay. So this is an old Cherokee story that talks about a time when an old Cherokee elder was sitting with his grandson, probably about your age, somewhere around 10, 12 years old, and he was telling them, he said, you know, it's a terrible thing. I have this fight inside of me, and it's a fight between two wolves. And the little boy said, well, why are the wolves fighting? He said, well, one is evil, and he is anger, and he is envy, and sorrow, and regret, and greed, and arrogance, and all those things that we consider evil. And the other is good. And he is joy and peace and love and serenity and kindness, all those things that we consider to be good. And the same fight is going on inside you and inside each and every other person. So the little boy looked around and asked, well, Grandpa, which one do you think will win? And the elder looked at his grandson and said lovingly, the one you feed. So then the question for you guys and everybody else listening is, what are you feeding in your lives?
Oh, thanks. Do either of you think there is ever a good reason to be violent?
I think that there's never a good reason to be violent. There really is. There's ways that we choose to react when something happens, you know, and then there's also ways we choose to present ourselves when we are everywhere, you know, whether it's in school, if you're in a meeting with your coworkers, or even at home, you know, you choose to react in the way that you want to react. And even, it's okay to be angry. You know, anger is a healthy emotion of every human being, but what you choose to do with the anger is what becomes what is it violent or is it not violent, and you choose which way you want to go.
The only thing that I could come up with in my brain is self-defense. And even in that, that's really a last resort. Anytime you speak to somebody who's in martial arts, they'll tell you that it's an art that is rarely used for violence, even in self-defense. So as a last resort, maybe. But I can't think of any situation where it would be my first response.
Thank you. Do violent kids become violent adults? And do you think that some people are unfixable and will always be violent?
Well, I think that kids that don't have an opportunity to learn something different than a violent behavior more than likely will become violent adults. Does that mean that they can continue to be violent? That, again, I think it's a choice, you know. You can seek help, or someone can seek it out for you. A lot of the teens that we work with, it's not always the teenager who says, help me, I don't know how to control my anger, you know, or help me, I punched my fist through the wall. It's usually a parent or a teacher or someone else who noticed the behavior and is seeking out help for that teenager. I think in the same way, there's a lot of adults that if that's all they've been exposed to, they really don't know that there could possibly be something else until someone opens the door for them, or there's something happens and it helps them seek out services, or someone else refers them or points them in the right direction. And I don't think that anyone is unfixable, because I don't like to see everyone as the problem. You know, it's like there's a reaction to who you are, and it may not be what everyone else expects, but we can work with you and help you teach you a different way to learn to deal with your emotions and your feelings.
I would have to agree with what Anna says. In order for somebody to be unfixable, I would have to agree with the fact that they were broken. And I don't see that people are broken. We just have different experiences, and sometimes we're fortunate enough to learn other alternatives for dealing with violence, and others of us don't have those opportunities. So do violent kids become violent adults? Sometimes. But I think that having things like, for example, this month, you guys didn't even know how smart you guys were on Get Smart Radio. But this month, it's actually, as of January 28th, the state Senate had a resolution that declared February Teen Dating Violence Awareness Prevention Month. See that? I told you guys you were smart. So I think what's important is that if we don't help our youth, then yeah, sure, they can become violent adults because they don't learn any other options. But if we have things like Get Smart Radio, like the activities that we offer throughout LA through Children's Institute, then we're providing a whole new generation with alternatives to violence.
Thank you. Do you think violent video games contribute to violent behavior in kids? And if so, what can we do about it?
Okay, before I answer that, I want to know what you guys think about that. Dun, dun, dun.
Well, I think that depending on the kid and his maturity and the way they react to the games, they could become violent. But some, like I know friends that play a lot of violent video games, yet they're always very nice. And I think that it's fine if you play some, but if you can't handle it, then it's not going to work.
Well, I never really play video games except with some of my friends, like Wii or something. But I've always been told that violent video games rot in your brain cells. And I kind of agree with that. But I do kind of think that violent video games can get you kind of violent because you're earning points to kill people. And if you go out there in the real world, you don't actually get points.
Well said. Where's that applause sign?
I have to agree with Griffin about your maturity and how you handle it. And there's also a fact that some kids get, it's kind of like a drug to them. They get completely addicted to the game, and they get more and more violent as much as they can while they play the game. Some people are sometimes mad, and they use that as a cool down. It helps them sometimes in bizarre ways. It cools them down to play a violent video game. It helps them use their anger on something else except for people. So there's a good and a bad side to it.
Good point. Well, the reality is that we don't really have a clear answer because there's a lot of controversy. If you look at the American Psychological Association, they say, yep, absolutely, it has an impact. And then you look at other studies and they say, well, kind of, it depends on their age, it depends on other factors. So if you're asking my personal opinion, I think it does have to do with people's age because, you know, our brains are still developing, even when we are getting into our early 20s. So if we're making connections that say, I get points for violence, it's probably going to stay in there for a little while. But if I'm already 15 and playing with that game, well, there's other little connections that my brain has already made that say, yeah, but in the real world, I'm not going to get points for it. So there's a lot of controversy, but I think that most of the time, if kids learn at an early age to play video games, they don't really have the capacity to tell what's the real circumstances and what are the real outcomes and what's fake on a video game.
Yeah, and I think I would agree with Jules, right? That it has to also do with how much the kid plays the game and what the object of the game ends up being for the kid, not so much, am I going to earn points or am I going to do? And I also think it has to do with, does the kid share that video game with the parent? Is the parent aware of what the kid is playing? A lot of times, especially in the Christmas season, I go to the mall and I hear kids telling their parents, I want this game. And the parent sometimes doesn't take the time to read what the game is about or look at the codes that they have for the age groups and all that stuff. So I think sometimes it has to do also with how much communication there is with the parent and the child so that the child understands that it is a video game and not necessarily a reality. And it's interesting because I was having this conversation with one of my youth yesterday who enjoys playing the video games that involves killing. That's his favorite kind of game. And I asked him, I said, why do you think that you enjoy it so much? And he said, it just helps me escape the real world. That's what it is for me. So it can be a relaxed mechanism for some people.
And it's a good point that you mentioned because sometimes parents will actually monitor what their kids are watching on television, but they won't always stop and see what the kids are playing on the video games. So that's a very good point you make. Thank you for that.
Here's three questions in one. How do kids get a hold of guns and knives? Who's giving them weapons, and what can we do about it?
I'm going to let Anna talk about that one.
Well, you know, the reality is that a lot of kids are curious, and if there is a gun in the home, a lot of kids will want to play with it. If it isn't in home, but they see a friend with it on the street, or they see someone else in possession of it, they want to have it, and they want to look at it. And sometimes they can start as early on with BB guns. A lot of kids want BB guns because they think they're fun and they can play with. And so it's a matter of how bad do they want it and what they're going to do to go get it. And then unfortunately, there are businesses that will sell these guns and knives to minors, even though they're not supposed to. We've worked with the police department, especially in the neighborhood where I work, to try to approach those businesses in a way that it's not necessarily punitive, so that we don't, you know, shut down their business and or that kind of things, but explain the dangers of having these types of items available to minors.
And also, sometimes it's important for us to get involved with the laws that allow things to happen. like one of the things that the VPC worked with was creating a ban on 50 caliber sniper rifles. Rifles? What are those? Rifles. and requiring trigger locks for all of the guns sold in parts of LA and some of the surrounding cities. So it really is an important thing for all of us to be involved in making sure that our kids are safe and that we remind the kids how to be safe around guns and make sure that we are using all of our systems to help our kids be safe.
Thank you. What happens when a kid is too young to talk about violence going on in his or her life? How do you find out about it?
Well, I think that even though kids are sometimes too young to use words to talk about the violence, they always have a way to communicate. Sometimes the way that kids communicate about the violence is by not talking, because they withdraw, they get really quiet in school or in other situations, or other times they're like all over the place. You can't contain them. They just are like climbing up walls and coming down and climbing back up and coming down. And even when other kids are listening and being able to sit in their seats and different things like that, you can see that they already have some aggression towards other kids. And if we go back to the fact that we learn how to be violent, then when you see young kids who are already being violent, then sometimes that's a clue.
Thank you. How do you teach kids not to be violent if they've been around violence their entire lives?
Well, you know, it's a matter of taking the time to teach them new techniques. You know, it could be something as simple as write down your emotions as opposed to going with the first reaction that you want to do. A breathing technique, you know, taking deep breaths, that kind of thing. And what we've practiced at the middle school is also conflict resolution and teaching kids so that they can be peer mediators with each other. Because sometimes, as much as we as adults feel that we're helping or we want to help, kids still don't trust us, you know? So we work to train other kids so that they can work together and find the solutions to their conflict so that it doesn't escalate to violence.
And I think that it's a matter of looking at, okay, so from zero to whatever age, we've exposed them to this. What can we expose them to now that will be stronger or more powerful than their exposure to violence? And I think one of the things that we're missing as a society, as a community, is our exposure to spirituality and religion. Because if you look around our communities, if you look at churches, synagogues, all sorts of different places where there's a focus on spirituality, it's about something that's bigger than each one of us individually, right? And a lot of these places have youth groups, right? And are any of these youth groups focused on violence? Not so much, right? So whatever it is, whether it be Buddhism or Judaism or any kind of spiritualism, I think is important because it gives kids another outlet, another place to go with their feelings and with their emotions. And it's also a place where kids and parents can connect. It's something that it's the same world for both the kids and the parents.
Yeah, and I would just add to that also, just exposing kids to caring adults. Sometimes if a kid has grown up in a home where everything is shouting and yelling, the mere sound of a teacher saying, put your stuff down in a loud voice will scare that child. So exposing them to caring adults, whether it is through teachers, mentors, coaches, whatever it is that they can get a different learning tool so they can start, you know, learning not to be violent anymore.
And also one more thing is to give kids credit for other things than just being violent. Because sometimes kids learn to be violent because that's the way that they get attention from people. And if they're trying to get mom's attention and she's not listening because she's busy with the other kids, or dad's attention and he's working, they're going to keep acting out and keep being violent until somebody, even though it's not the kind of attention the kid wanted originally, somebody's going to pay attention. So if in the schools we can start paying attention to them for things like doing their schoolwork well, or being a great artist, or being a great singer, or being a great whatever they're great at, because we each have something we're great at, then that's another way to keep them from being focused on violence.
Milo's about to ask. That is a good one. That's a good one for them. Milo's about to ask the last question, and while he does, I want to make sure that you guys have the opportunity to write down your questions, and Natalie's going to come by and pick up postcards. So while you're listening attentively to this, if you have a question, please write it down. She'll pick it up. Sorry to interrupt the flow of life. Here you go.
You're contributing.
Thank you. Can each of you tell us a happy ending story where there was violence that ended, or a violent person that really changed for the better? And can you point out why you think the violence stopped?
I think that it's hard for me to pick out one particular happy ending story. I think in general, the stories that are really happy endings for me, because now I've been at CII for, well, longer than some of you have been alive, for about 9 years. The happy ending stories are when there's families that we help, and then they get back on their feet and come back and volunteer, or come back and teach other kids. Those are the really happy ending stories, because other times we don't really get to see the end of the story. We kind of stop in the middle when they're still working on things and finding other options. So anytime that I see a family come back and want to give back, that's a happy ending.
I was actually thinking about a student of mine who, one of my coworkers and I worked with him about 5 years ago, and he was a kid that could not be in his class longer than 5 minutes before the teacher sent him out, and he would punch the wall on his way out or punch a chair or whatever he could punch, he did it, except students. He wouldn't punch other kids unless they were talking about him. So we talked about everything. We offered counseling. We would try to get parenting, to get the parents involved. And it just was not working for this kid. And then one day we came across an acting class being taught at USC by USC students to inner city kids. And so we said, you know, you have all this energy. Why don't you try this? And he thought, I'm not going to like this. I hate this. So he went and he stayed there. And then we lost touch with him because he moved on to high school. And he actually came back about 5 months ago to my office, and he is now going to graduate this year from his high school, and he's going to be enrolling at Santa Monica College, actually here, and he's pursuing his BA in drama, and he got involved so much with that group that he actually goes around town performing now. So he got away from the violent way he was reacting to stuff, put it into acting, and now he's pursuing his career in that way.
Now it's time to ask some questions written down by the live studio audience.
Question number one. What do you do when a kid has been involved with violence? How do you get that feeling out of them?
I think it depends on what that feeling is. Because sometimes that feeling, I'm not sure who asked the question. I feel like I should talk to the person who asked the question. Sometimes that feeling is sadness. So we need to get to the root of that. Sometimes that feeling is loneliness. Sometimes that feeling is frustration. So depending on what that feeling really is that looks like violence, how we can help them. It might be as easy as channeling it, like the story that Anna just shared, channeling it into a different place where they can let out their energy, sports, art, acting, whatever that is. Other times, it's just listening, giving them an opportunity to share about what they're sad about or what they're frustrated about, and letting them know that it's okay and that they can just talk about it instead of being violent.
Do you think that everyone who has been affected by violence can be helped?
Yes.
Ditto.
If
we didn't believe that, we couldn't do the work we do.
Thank you. How are poor kids affected by violence?
That's an interesting question when a lot of times we consider that poverty is a form of violence.
I have a 4-year-old son who wants to... Okay, that's somebody's question. Okay. I have a 4-year-old son who wants to play with toy guns all the time. Should I let him play with them?
It's a tough one. You know, whenever I buy gifts for... younger kids, I don't really buy guns. You know, I'm not a big fan of them. But I have to tell you that if I play a video game, like that old Nintendo shooting game, I loved playing with the toy gun that came with the console. So at times I'm torn because it's a matter of like, well, if I buy it now, is the kid going to interpret it that they can play with a gun and grow up to just want to kind of do that, you know? As an adult, I've never gone to a shooting range. I don't know what a real gun feels like in my hands. So I think it's one of those things that as a parent, you have to decide if you are going to purchase it, what kind of conversations you're going to have with your kid about that, and see what comes out of it as well with your child and guide them through when they use it.
It's tough to parent when you're not the parent, but I'll do my best here. At 4 years old, I believe that kids can be directed in other directions. Wow, that was from the Department of Redundancy Department. Kids can be focused on other things, even if they have a toy gun in their hand. So I would actually put it back on us as the adults, put it on you as the parent. What does it mean to you that your 4-year-old wants to play with a gun? If you have a lot of charge on the fact that this 4-year-old is playing with a gun, and oh my God, he's playing with a gun, oh my, it's probably going to mean something to the 4-year-old. If you go, oh, that's the gun. Hey, do you want to come play with this ball over here? Yeah, why don't we come back to that later? Then it may not be a big deal. So it really comes back to us as the adults to determine the yes and the no and what's appropriate.
This says, for the Get Smart kids, I'll start. If you see two kids getting into a fight at school, what would you do?
Well, the first thing I would do is, I mean, if you see an adult running over there, which that's pretty much the only fight I've ever seen at school, there was already like several adults running there, so there was not much I could do. But if I was around them and it was like there was no adults around and I had to make a mature decision, I would say, hey, you don't do that, that's not a smart idea, or you can get hurt, or something of the sort.
Not a lot of violence happens at my school, but there's a lot of, when we're at recess or something, and there's a bunch of kids playing soccer, and then recess is over, and then right at the end, someone scores a goal, and I would try to help by saying that it wasn't a goal because it was after recess. And everybody would be like, no, that's not true. It's a goal. And it's not a
none of your business and stuff like that. And I would try to help by telling the person it was not a goal. It was just, yeah.
Sounds like a future lawyer.
Well, there's rarely any fights in my school, but there's a lot of name calling, and a lot of times it happens to me, a lot of people start calling me names. And if I see a fight, well, my school isn't the kind of school where if you tell on someone and they see you tell, they won't try to get back at you. They'll just be all bummed out. But so I'll probably tell on them so that, you know, they can learn. And but if there's no teacher around, I'll probably do it like Griffin said, don't do that or something. And if they try to get back at me, then I will go tell an adult.
This is going to be a long answer. Well, at school we have peer mediation, adults, we have counselors trying to teach. Peer mediation, I don't see them in action a lot. They don't, I don't see that they really do a lot of things. And the counselor only takes private matters that are told to her, and not a lot of times people tell her about things that are happening. And I have one, I'm in one of the schools that really is, people are really, really, they don't like treating others as equal. They, 8th graders pick on 7th graders, 7th graders pick on 6th graders, and 6th graders take all the blame for everything. And so, I've recently gone into a couple fights, and, well, not me necessarily, me and someone else, but I've seen a couple fights at school, physical harming, and I try to break it up before it starts getting too brutal and where people get really hurt. And I really don't care about what the person is going to do to me after when I try to stop them from fighting. I just do it anywhere.
Can I just say, I would also ask all the adults to ask themselves that question. You'd be surprised how many adults walk on the streets or are in a store and you see kids fighting and no one gets involved. And it's just a question for ourselves as well. It's like, why we don't get involved? What is it saying about our own society? Because it's recently, I don't know if you all saw the girl who was beat up at a metro station, and the adult in there did not step in. So there's a lot of questions that it also brings up for adults as to why you don't get involved. But I think it's something that we need to start doing as adults to self-explore why we don't do it.
And I'm going to tell one other quick little story, because apparently I came with stories. But this is a research-based story. They were doing a research study on empathy and how people respond to different situations. And they took people from all walks of life, and they did this particular study on priests. And they set them up in a way that they had to go to an interview, and then they had to walk to another building to do a second interview. And on their way to that second interview, there was somebody who needed help, somebody in distress. And they wanted to see how many of these priests would stop to help out. What would you think would be the determining factor on whether these priests would stop or not? I'll tell you. Time. Some of these priests were given 15 minutes to walk from one building to the other and were told, just take your time, they're not really in a hurry, they'll start when you get there. 90%+ of those priests stopped. Others said, you know what, we've run a little bit late, you only have 5 minutes to get to the other building, so please go quickly, they're waiting for you. And only about 25% of those priests stopped. So considering the fast-paced society that we are creating right now, I would echo Anna's request and invitation to look at how we're living in this fast-paced world, and when are we stopping to really give somebody else a hand?
This question is not for me. It's from the audience, so... Okay. What do you think about medication programs? I like all the ad businesses.
No, ADD. It must be ADD.
ADD.
Oh.
What do you think about the ADD business?
Thank you. It looks like ad on paper, doesn't it?
Yes.
I'm not a very big fan of ADD. It's interesting to me that my parents' generation didn't have as much ADD.
Can you explain to them?
You guys are looking a little quizzical, aren't you?
I think I've heard about it a couple times before.
The counselor told we had a one of our PE classes, and a counselor once told us in sixth grade about the ADD, and I think that it's that sometimes it can be a good thing, but sometimes really it doesn't help at all.
Well, attention deficit disorder is what we're talking about, ADD, and I think that a lot of times it's, again, I have to go back to my faithful approach of it's a learned behavior. For example, I got the opportunity to travel across to Africa this last December. And one of the things that we were talking about is that the kids who are there in Africa, living there and out in the bush, learn different skills. They can see not only that sticks and stones are playing things, but also they can look out into the horizon and see that there's a lion hiding behind a bush, waiting for whatever gets to happen next. Whereas their cousins, who are exposed to video games and television and all those different things, don't have the attention span and can't see as far away. So, does ADD exist? I'm not a psychiatrist, so I'm probably not the best person to address what I think of it. That's probably part of why I'm not a psychiatrist. But I think that if we are teaching our kids how to have some self-regulation, some self-coping, different options, then we don't need to be jumping behind them and creating ADD kids.
Do you think violence on TV or in films teach children to be less sensitive to violence?
Yes. I think that just like anything else in life, if we're exposed to it more and more, there's not the shock factor. You know, if you think back to whatever scary moments you've had in your life, the first time that something scary happens, it's like, you know, you jump back and it kind of scares you and there's a whole, like, body response. But if it happens again, then your response isn't quite the same. It's like what you asked about earlier was poverty. I think poverty is kind of a similar thing. The more we're exposed to poverty, the less we respond to it. I think when we first see poverty, we go, oh, wow, this person needs help. But when all of a sudden there's a homeless person on our way to school every day, it's like, oh, hey, what's going on? And it doesn't become about what this person needs. So I think that violence on TV and in other media makes us respond in a different way. Like, it's just part of life.
Now for the quiz questions. We have two. Please raise your hand and Natalie will pick you to answer. Speak loudly so we can hear you.
Oh, did you have one more? Oh, hold on one second. Do you have one more?
audience question. Sorry. Live radio. Woo-hoo!
Are there kids who share at schools who speak and share their experience in becoming nonviolent?
In becoming nonviolent?
Yeah. Are there, I think what they're asking to say is, are there kids who share their experiences on and how they became nonviolent to other kids?
We used to run, unfortunately due to funding, we don't have our anti-bullying program currently, but when we used to run our program, that was part of what the kids would learn. They would undergo training to be peer mediators. They would actually teach other kids about mediation. And we had a set period when mediations would be held. And then that same group of kids would go to conferences and trainings and speak about their process, their experience, and what they were learning. We had a teacher at the particular school that I'm at now. There was a teacher who was carrying it on as much as she could. But again, due to funding, our electives have been cut. So it is something that we are working on and hopefully can get going again.
Now for the quiz questions. We still have two. Please raise your hand and Natalie will pick you to answer. Speak loudly so we can hear you.
Question one. How long has Adriana worked at the Children's Institute?
Thanks.
Longer than most of you have been alive. Fair number. That's what she said.
No, she said
no. So, okay. So, okay.
Nine.
9 years.
There we go.
Question number two.
Thank you.
Name one kind of gun that has regulation on it because of the Violence Prevention Network.
Is it back there?
The 50 caliber rifle.
Congratulations.
We'd like to thank our guests, Adriana Molina and Anna Moscoso. We are so... We are so grateful you came. Here are some smart food for you so you can always stay smart.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you all so much for coming and supporting Kids Get Smart Radio. Yeah. We hope you listen to our future broadcasts. And don't forget,
tune in to your brainwaves at GetSmartRadio.net.
Yo, 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 yo.
Get Smart Radio.
Yo, yo, yo. Yo, 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 yo.
Get Smart Radio.
Yo, 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 yo.
Get Smart Radio.
Yo, 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 yo.
Get Smart Radio.
Get smart. Get smart. Comes right out of your heart.
That's the way I like it.
So go get smart.
Yo, 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 yo.
Get smart radio.
Thank you guys so much for coming. This was their first radio broadcast. It was streamed live across the whole world. Thousands of people. We actually had a hacker and they rerouted all the Olympic broadcasts and it went to GetSmartRadio.net. So the whole world saw this broadcast.